show that discusses current events from a relatively fully informed and outrageously honest perspective. I'm Kevin Barrett with Professor Tony Hall of the University of Lethbridge, back from the 9/11 Truth Film Festival at the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, California. And by the way, we're not going to beg for money this morning because we did make our goal ahead of time. So keep on helping us make our goal ahead of time. We won't beg. All right. So there's the Grand Lake Theater. And we were there, Tony. And if anybody wasn't there, they can watch it at No Lies Radio. The link is nolliesradio.org/filmfestival. So you can still get your ticket and watch it during the next couple of weeks. Tony, that was a wonderful event, wasn't it?
It was a wonderful event. Probably there was upwards to 1,000 people. I haven't seen 1,000 truthers in one place at one time. Very good cross-section of people, very engaged, lots of discussion, a fabulous presentation by William Pepper, who represented the King family and proved that the government was involved in the assassination of Martin Luther King. We spoke. You can hear what we said by going to No Lies Radio and helping out No Lies Radio to make back the money it invested in covering this event.
And, you know, 9/11 is still having such a powerful effect in the world. That's why these events are so important. And, for example, just, a couple of hours ago, not very long ago anyway, breaking news as we report this, there's been a blast in the London Underground, Shades of 7/7/2005. 22 people injured, scream the headlines. Captain Eric May used to tell us that whenever the number 11 or multiples of 11 show up in newspaper headlines, that is a signal from the people who were behind all of this. Yes, we did it. In any case, I don't know about that. But, Tony, this post-9/11 era of endless terrorism, terrorizing us into giving up our freedoms and rushing off to these wars to destroy the Middle East for Israel and to dominate the world for the U.S. empire. This is an ugly era. We need to put it behind us.
Well, I don't know what to make of this. I became aware of it just before going on air. Could I say on air? And I read in the New York Post an indication from the National Health Service in Britain that nobody was seriously injured. There's a video going around of a little fire in a garbage pail inside a subway car. And so whether it's anything substantial, there's other reports talking about bloody people with their hair on fire and some kind of firebomb. So whether it's a big thing, a small thing, overinflated reports, I'm not sure at this point.
Well, I'm not either. But the only way we're going to get past this endless barrage of these possible false flags, and in all the biggest cases, pretty well proven false flags, is to get a full exposure of the truth of 9/11. And this anniversary, Tony, the Daily Mail did the best story. This, we did report on this last week, so let's not linger on this story, but this was a terrific story in a relatively non-respectable London tabloid. Maybe that's why they're allowed to do this. Over in the New York Times, you're not allowed to tell the full truth or even report decently. So instead, Paul Krugman had to sort of beat around the bush a little bit here and say that he called this a totally false narrative, literally from the first minutes. This is the op-ed page of the New York Times, but he said it in such a way that it could be interpreted other than a full-fledged 9/11 truth statement. I wrote about this at Veterans Today, trying to trumpet the fact that the New York Times op-ed page was telling us some 9/11 truth between the lines. And look what happened to my article, Tony. This is the next day. It had actually, the real number of reads must have been about 5,000 based on previous experience and the number of Facebook likes. But look, the counter got stuck at 31 reads. This article was posted on the morning of September 11th, and on the morning of September 12th, it had been read over 5,000 times, I would estimate, and the counter said 31. This is far from the first time that some kind of cyber intervention has apparently been used to try to prevent a 9/11 truth story from going viral on the anniversary.
Well, before we get into the Kevin Barrett subtext of all of this, let's just stop and contemplate and reflect on the New York Times running a story saying that the whole truth of 9/11 hasn't come out, that we were given a false account of it. He goes on to say that unlike the Pearl Harbor, the real Pearl Harbor in 1941, which produced a kind of unified nation, he says after day one, where there was initial outburst of unity, there was then political infighting and exploitation of this situation, and everything has been downhill since, and the polarization in U.S. politics and the degradation of U.S. politics really goes back to this day.
Indeed. So shout out to Paul Krugman for telling about as much 9/11 truth as you're allowed to tell on the op-ed page of the New York Times. And parenthetically, Tony, Gordon Duff, editor of Veterans Today, once told me that he said, that was a great 9/11 article you just wrote, Kevin. You know, you would be killed to prevent that from being published in the New York Times. But of course, at BT, we can get away with it.
Well, before we just say that there were these two stories that were aberrations, I would like to suggest that my reading of it, it's not really aberrations, that the mainstream are getting the idea that you can't just recycle the same old bullshit, the same old discredited account. There's just so much evidence out there that the original account is not supported by the evidence. So the stories, it seemed to me, many stories sort of had an aspect of the story that said, of course, you know, this is the official version, but there are people who entertain other interpretations. And I think in this era of Trump, fake news, this whole discourse, that it's increasingly hard to hold on to the sort of mother of all false flag, psychological operations, lies, corruption, within the media, that it's being exposed. This 9/11 story is exposed. I mean, Alex Jones, Trump's main PR agent, popularized the term 9/11 was an inside job. A big part of Trump's constituency know about 9/11 and are really disgusted with him for going along with the same old story to keep us in Afghanistan, the sort of classic shootout zone for budding empires and their wish to dominate the world.
Probably a smaller segment of the New York Times audience is equally disgusted. I read the New York Times, you know, just to see what the empire is thinking and reporting. And here we have a story in the New York Times that fails to ask how 1,112 bodies were totally vaporized in what we're told is a gravity-driven building collapse caused when relatively minor fires weakened some steel. Those bodies should have all been completely intact, a little bit squashed, but basically there should not have been even any real, serious sort of blowing apart of bodies. There's no way that the body could be anything but intact in this kind of collapse. And yet here we have the New York Times admitting that more than 1,000 of the bodies of the victims of 9/11 were utterly and completely vaporized. There wasn't even a sliver of bone or fingernail left to get DNA from. And we have the same thing over in Time magazine in the next story. Once again, Time magazine talks about this 9/11 victim's family member saying that, yes, we understand that these 1,112 bodies, including our loved one, were, quote, vaporized and immolated. That is the direct quote from this Time magazine article. How can a collapse, a building just crumbling down on itself from gravity due to minor office fires weakening the steel support columns, which is the official story, how can that vaporize and immolate over 1,000 bodies, more than a third of the people killed there? How can these mainstream outlets continue to report this stuff and miss the elephant in the living room?
Yeah, my skepticism is raised by the idea that over half of the victims, their remains were discovered sufficiently intact to create some kind of DNA evidence. Seems to me it would be very easy, you know who the victims are, to reassure people, oh yes, we found some evidence of your loved one's DNA. Is that all true? I mean, this is where this whole mystique around building physics and whatnot, it seems to me, you know, you just look at the pictures of those buildings coming down, exploding into talcum powder. You see pictures of actual vaporization happening. It takes a huge amount of energy to create those kind of outcomes. It's nothing like any building demolition we've ever seen before in pictures. And it makes sense that it doesn't correspond with the idea of a pancaking series of stories coming down as steel melts. I mean, that is just not, does not conform with what you can see with your own eyes.
Well, you know, while we're talking about the relatively mainstream coverage of 9/11 and how so much of it is so revealing, how about this tabloid story over in the Daily Star from London about 9/11 predictive programming? They don't call it that, but that's obviously what it is. Did these video games chillingly predict the World Trade Center attacks? Screams this headline. And look at these video game images from 1989. There was a video game from 1989 called Master of Weapon, produced by Taito, for the arcade and Mega Drive system. And Tony, it shows exactly what these 9/11 building destructions looked like. It gives us precise images of 9/11 and within the game. And remember, this is being put out in 1989. It has this happening on September 11th. And there are other examples of this as well. And we could go on and on about that. So many examples of this predictive programming where Hollywood told us what they were going to do on September 11th, 2001, long before they did it.
Yes, video games, predictive programming. And in a future story, we'll talk about, I plan to talk about Arnon Milchan, the Hollywood producer, sort of James Bond style Mossad agent in Hollywood, and his production of Medusa Touch in 1978, and in 2000, The Lone Gunman, both of which show airliners crashing into skyscrapers in a very predictive, suggestive fashion.
I think this predictive programming stuff, Tony, rises to the level of Smoking Gun. You know, one or two sort of tangential references could be a coincidence, but a long list of just clear in-your-face messages. This is what those of us who control Hollywood, and we know who that is, Zionists, are going to be doing, and then they do it. I think this is a message designed to try to inculcate learned helplessness among the American public. Well, I don't feel learned helpless at all, and I'm going to fight back with everything I have against these bastards. Well, how about the other smoking gun, the one that everybody admits is a smoking gun, Building 7? Here we had Gaia, a relatively mainstream sort of, you know, alternative health and spirituality kind of outlet. But, you know, hey, that, they have a big audience telling us about the Building 7 smoking gun.
Yes, I'm listening to whatever it is rubbing somewhere in the system. I noticed in the comments last week lots of theories about where this sound of rustling paper or cloth is coming from. But in any case, Building 7, yes, the smoking gun of 9/11. This has been referred to in many ways. Of course, it's not hit by any jet plane. It has this really unlikely story that somehow an office fire in a strategic place caused the steel frame skyscraper to collapse. One would think that if it can be shown that a single fire in a 47-story steel frame building can create the sudden collapse of the whole building falling at the speed of gravity with no resistance whatsoever, perhaps insurance might have gone up for people living in steel-frame tall buildings, given that all you need is an office fire to take it down. I guess you don't need demolition crews or anything. You just put the fire in the strategic place and boom, the building comes down.
That would be a heck of a cheap way to have a demolition company start up, wouldn't it? You know, you just have to send one guy up to start a couple of wastebasket fires and boom, straight down through the path of most resistance.
And of course, the Institute NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, their study is ridiculous. It's pathetic. And Halsey, Leroy Halsey at the University of Alaska, is doing a study on Building 7, which is getting a lot of attention, and we'll talk about it.
Okay, and here's another broad audience, kind of relatively mainstream outlet here, Newsminer.com, telling us that 9/11 was a false flag event and war was the hidden agenda. This Newsminer is the voice of the interior of Alaska, okay? So this isn't like some conspiracy rag. This is the local newspaper for people in a local area that's probably bigger than, you know, any other five American states combined. So that's pretty impressive. This is right up there with among the best mainstream stories of this year's 9/11 anniversary.
The 9/11 truth movement, the citizens' investigation into 9/11, I think it's a very powerful, important expression of average people realizing we've been lied to, going to work, doing investigations. Somehow this news from Alaska that Alaska is becoming, you know, the frontier zone of America, that the frontiersmen are actually digging in at the University of Alaska to prove once and for all this bullshit story can't be allowed to be sustained and have the U.S. having anything like respectability, because it obviously, the center of gravity in this whole situation is the United States, whatever role Israel may have played in directing it, but it happened in the United States. It's U.S. institutions that are responsible and have shown themselves, especially NIST and the 9/11 Commission, to be really corrupt, and it's just known so widely now through this continued PSYOP that U.S. has lost its respectability as a science-based, truth-based kind of society.
So shout out to NewsMiner up in Alaska. Keep on mining for truth.
Mining for truth. Nice.
That's right. There was a gold rush up in Alaska last century, and I guess now maybe there's a truth rush.
I'm having a truth rush right now, Kevin. Way to go.
Well, Tony, you do have truth rushes occasionally on air. So how about the next story? This one is the global research story. Now, here we're moving from relatively mainstream outlets to a real major force in the genuine alternative media. And that is global research, which I hadn't realized actually began and went online 2 days before 9/11 back in 2001. And they put out this story almost instantly after 9/11, providing crucially important historical context. I wish I had known about global research back then. So here's the repeat of the story they did shortly after 9/11, pointing out that at 11 a.m., of September 11th, 2001, the whole mainstream media was already chanting, "Bin Laden did it." I mean, that should have been a giveaway in and of itself.
Yeah, so here's a story coming out on September 12th, written the, you know, night of September 11th, and exposing, you know, who Osama bin Laden really is, this CIA job in Afghanistan, and the creation of these mercenary forces, proxy armies in the name of Islamic jihadism and such. When I read this story, I hadn't been aware that Osama bin Laden was very involved in the situation in Chechnya. And, of course, Vladimir Putin came to power in Russia based on false flag apartment bombings, leading to the accusation that Chechens did it, and this enabled him to lead a Russian crusade into Chechnya to quell the separatist forces of Chechnya. And there is Osama bin Laden pictured there in amongst that CIA operation. So the idea that there is this connection between the U.S. 9/11 inside job and the Russian apartment buildings inside job in 1999. That's one thing I got out of this article published on September 12, 2011.
That's right. Well, bin Laden was the patsy sort of for both, but we have to remember that bin Laden has been mainly used, he and his organization have been mainly used by the U.S. side, not so much the Russian side. Bin Laden has been used by the U.S. empire to try to destabilize the Russian empire.
But, well, that's where the research has been, but maybe it's time to follow that other stream of research and to really develop this idea of using Islamic terrorism, the imagery of Islamic terrorism, that this is a joint operation between Russia and the United States and Israel.
Well, I don't know.
It's a possibility. Anyway, I throw that out for, you know, possible research in the future.
Well, I think they're all doing
conclusion here. Yeah.
I think all sides are obviously using these kinds of deceptions to try to get what they want. The Russians are doing it. The Americans are doing it. The Israelis are really doing it. But I think these are still separate entities, and I don't think it's a joint operation so much as they're all pursuing their own interests, and nobody has any real interest in exposing what the other guy is doing, and then they'll expose what you're doing. So anyway, it's a great article. Shout out to Global Research, one of our great alternative outlets. And the next story comes from 911tap.org, which is the leading activist outlet right now for 9/11 work. And here we have a story that's based on the observation that Donald Trump didn't get any traction whatsoever in the mainstream from his claim that we have to stay in Afghanistan because they did 9/11. That went nowhere, and that's very positive, and that means we should get out there and spread the truth even faster, because people don't buy the official garbage. They just need a few facts and more honest interpretations to wake up.
And let's be clear, Trump's core constituency, I believe, is somewhat concurrent and overlapping with InfoWars' constituency. And Alex Jones called 9/11 an inside job. Trump was very quickly on the media saying the buildings couldn't have fallen the way we've been told. He knows. He would know. He is being forced to deny his core constituency. And so we, the 9/11 truthers, Donald Trump, a disproportionate number of us voted for you and thought James Fetzer, we saw this all played out on False Flag Weekly News. And you have betrayed us, sir. Donald Trump, you know, you are a liar. You are part of that criminal cabal that you so clearly identified in taking the presidency, in the lead up to the presidency. And the first thing you have to do is speak to your core and give us a glimmer of hope and truth on 9/11, which, you know, sir, very well is not the way we were told on 9/11.
Well, good luck with that. I think Trump will do that maybe on the day that it becomes the nuclear option. It's the only thing he'll be able to do to stop himself from being thrown out of office. Maybe he would do the Samson option here and pull down the tent with 9/11 truth. I certainly hope that plays out, because I'd love to see Trump get thrown out of office and take the whole rotten, stinking 9/11 lie-based system down with him. But here's another act.
I'm just going to jump in here with I'm going to foreshadow that we have a story coming up with Alex Jones saying Trump is being drugged. And this has a lot of implications. And it's sort of saying, well, he's not responsible for what he's saying. But we'll get there. We'll get there. I'm breaking out of
sequence. Well, hey, let's try anyway. Okay. Next story, Bobby McElvain Act, the next phase of AE 9/11 truth activism. So 9/11 TAP, which we just mentioned in the previous story, is a spinoff from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which is pushing this project. What is this Bobby McElvain Act? Well, Bobby was the son of Bob McElvain. Bobby tragically died in the North Tower on 9/11. Just as he had entered the building, he was probably blown up by the explosives that we've heard about, that Willie Rodriguez talked about. And Bob has been a heroic fighter for truth and justice around the tragic loss of his son ever since. And so this project is called the Bobby McElvain Act, and it would impanel a select committee in either chamber of Congress to reinvestigate the destruction of the World Trade Center.
Yes, and of course, this demand for an investigation, this has been a part of the 9/11 truth movement ever since I've been involved in 2008. And there were a few years there where it seemed appropriate to step back and just say, come on, authorities, do an honest investigation. But is at this point in time, with so many agencies so deeply embedded in this lie, is it really possible to sort this out? I think we need a lot of politics to come in. This 9/11 thing has been so torqued politically. It has to go to the jurists. It has to go eventually to the courts. It has to go for proper investigation. But to get there, we have to be clear that we need to do politics to force this subject into the agenda of our betrayed governments.
It's getting there. It's penetrating the mainstream, as we see in all of these stories. So many of these stories from regular, relatively mainstream outlets. Going back to those. The next one is from the Washington Examiner. about why people are still getting sick 16 years after 9/11. It describes, for example, somebody with breathing problems goes to the hospital and finds out that she only has 49% lung capacity. Now, why would that be? Well, the towers were full of asbestos, and there may also have been a nuclear dimension to this. We're seeing thousands, literally, according to this mainstream story, thousands of people have rare cancers, more than 50 cancers, many of which are extremely rare, many of which are only seen with nuclear reactions, nuclear fallout, nuclear products. And the next story is an older one from Veterans Today, where I often write, talking about these alleged nuke cancers from 9/11. And the previous story that we just cited over at the relatively mainstream outlet, the Washington Examiner, does have a link to the CDC data on these thousands of people diagnosed with more than 50 cancers, many of them rare and only seen in nuclear events.
Yes, at the film festival in Oakland, James Corbett report, there were several short films, documentaries, 9/11 suspects. And one particularly fascinated me, Christine Todd Whitman, the health official who said it was all right to go out and the atmosphere was okay, it was safe. And so Christine Todd Whitman takes responsibility for these thousands of cancers, telling people that a very toxic, dangerous environment is okay. That has big time liability, and it doesn't matter really if you're, you know, for 9/11 as an inside job or whatever. One thing all people can relate to is this lies about the health situation and the tragedy of thousands and possibly hundreds of thousands of lives as these cancers come on, and the statistics are overwhelming to demonstrate first responders and people in the area are subject to higher rates of cancer. The responsibility for this goes back to an individual, Christine Todd Whitman, who has taken no responsibility, apparently is shameless, and completely faces down the camera and just continues to lie and lie and lie about this awful health situation, which really is one of the smoking guns of 9/11.
And then the question remains of where did this 1,000 tons of asbestos that is eating away at people's lungs come from? And the answer to that, Tony, is, as I'm sure you know, is that the towers were encased in asbestos fireproofing. The columns, the steel frame members were encased in asbestos right up to, I forget, you know, more than halfway up the towers, I believe. So there was a huge asbestos removal problem prior to 9/11, and the city had been ordered in a federal court case to remove all this asbestos. It would have cost far more than those white elephant buildings were worth. They had antiquated communications equipment. They were largely vacant. And the city had been desperately looking for a way to tear down those twin towers for at least a decade before 9/11. But there was no way to do it because it was prohibitively expensive. Removing the asbestos alone would have cost more than the buildings were worth. And so a mafiosi individual named Larry Silverstein and his organized crime syndicate friends moved in, and 2 months before 9/11, they purchased the World Trade Center, doubled the terrorism insurance, and got rich. When a little over $100 million that they had put down for these buildings suddenly turned into more than $5 billion. That's the real relevance of the asbestos here. And it's just mind boggling that Silverstein and his friends, including his close friend Benjamin Netanyahu, have gotten away with this.
My goodness, you string out the information and you connect the dots so efficiently, and you cover such broad expanses of information in that little short presentation. 9/11 for sure is the elephant in the room of our public politics, of our political discourse. And I suppose the image of the Twin Towers as white elephants, these are the white elephants of the elephants in the room.
Indeed they are. Well put, Tony. Well, how about the world take on 9/11? Over in Afghanistan, polls show that virtually nobody in Afghanistan even has ever heard of 9/11. And yet their country has been destroyed because of it. Well, in Germany, Germans may be brainwashed on various issues, but they're not only terrified of terrorism, it's the biggest concern, but 89% of them don't believe the official story of 9/11, according to this poll. And this was a scientific poll by a major its outfits. So this isn't, you know, this isn't just an online sort of survey that's self-selective. No, this is a real poll. 89% don't believe the official story. The world doesn't buy it. And yet here in the U.S. and elsewhere, the mainstream media, dominated as it is by these forces that were in a sense, you know, in a vague and abstract way, these forces were behind 9/11. The same forces run the media, hence were fed this diet of bullshit.
Remember Marcus Graich, who pushed us into the Left Out Forum a couple of months ago? Yeah. Marcus Graich, who worked for
the Left Forum, yes.
The Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung, and seems to be, you know, operating basically for Israel in this situation. Marcus Graich, do you believe the official story of 9/11? Are you part of that left-wing cowardly group who won't step up to the plate and identify the nature of the wars going on, who did what to whom? Without that analysis, the current militarization of our society is really difficult to understand. Are you contributing to the failure of the anti-war movement, Marcus Graich?
Of course he is. Okay, and meanwhile, the war goes on. The Senate has voted against an amendment that would stop the endless wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Why are these wars still going on? These have lasted vastly longer than World War II, the Civil War, World War, any of the Vietnam even, and yet we can't stop them. Why is that? It's the lingering after effects of the 9/11 big lie. And these so-called anti-war people on the so-called left who are not focusing their efforts on 9/11 truth, they're worse than useless. They are the war party. They're not the anti-war party. They are participating in the worst act of genocide and the worst crime against humanity in all of human history, the murder of 34 million people in mostly Muslim countries, targeted in advance by the pre-scripted 9/11 public relations operation.
And Rand Paul steps forward to question this new congressional motion for sort of endless war. So Rand Paul, a libertarian, the classic libertarian, this whole movement to really deal with the war machine is left to the right-wing libertarians. And while the left, promotes intervention, military intervention in the name of Antifa, in the name of humanitarian, the power woman, what's her name?
Power woman?
Cass Sunstein's wife. She was,
Victoria Nuland.
I
know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on because
the power couple. Couple.
Let's move on to Venezuela, because there was a 9/11 in Venezuela, and the same useless so-called left that can't get its grip on the 9/11 inside job is also a lot of that group is an apologist for this attempt at regime change in Venezuela against the leftist government. They all were hip to the 9/11 Chile coup back in 1973, but today, brainwashed by 9/11 and everything that's come since, the so-called left is utterly lame on every issue imaginable, including this one. So why is the U.S. now trying to overthrow the Venezuelan government? Next slide. It's about the dollar. Dollar hegemony. Same reason that we had to destroy Iraq. They were selling oil in euros. Same reason that we had to destroy Libya. They were also trying to undermine the Rothschild petrodollar. And, of course, all of these countries are no good friends of the Zionists either. So it's pretty much all related here. Tony, you think Venezuela is going to have a major effect by ditching the dollar?
Well, this analysis of these three countries ditching the dollar, Libya and Iraq and now Venezuela, and this being the biggest no-no, the U.S. dollar came out of World War II as the global currency. Keynes wanted to have some kind of new currency, but U.S. had the dominant position. They forced it that the dollar would be the instrument of international transactions. All major international transactions would have to be in dollars. 1971, the gold standard was abandoned. The effort was to attach the dollar to oil, to get Saudi Arabia to say that OPEC, all transactions have to be in dollars. Then Saddam Hussein broke out of this. pattern. Muammar Gaddafi broke out of this pattern. Now Venezuela, which is a big oil country, is breaking out of this pattern. And the U.S. dollar has just lost its mystique. It's just been manufactured in too huge quantities. We really don't know how many dollars are really out there. Quantitative easing, all kinds of fancy names to say, just flood the system with U.S. dollars so that it becomes kind of a facade. The currency is losing its value. Well, it's that simple.
Indeed, and that's helping take down the empire. But the empire may or may not go down peacefully, and one place where it could start a big fight to not go down peacefully is with respect to the Korean Peninsula, where more madness is breaking out as North Korea launches another missile and the Americans fulminate, the mainstream media fulminates. This just happened, I think, yesterday. This is the longest-range missile yet that they've fired. It went over Japan. It clearly wasn't targeting Guam or any American possessions. It was targeting the middle of the Pacific, and yet it's a threat to the world, we're told. And then there's the EMP threat. In the next slide, we have the possibility that North Korea could explode a nuclear weapon high up in space and take out the electrical grid and fry all of the computers. One of them in Kansas at the right altitude, maybe 400 to 500 kilometers, could take out most of the electrical grid and destroy most of the computers in the continental United States. So this is interesting. Tony, sometimes I think that a nuclear war of this kind might not even be so bad if the world just fried all of its electronics and computers. There would be a lot of suffering, but we're going to have worse suffering, as the Unabomber always explained, if we don't have something like this. I don't know. Maybe my Luddite tendencies are running out of control here. But in any case, this EMP threat is the latest scaremongering stuff we're hearing about North Korea.
Yes, I just learned the phrase electromagnetic pulse. The P is for pulse, and this pulse can be, burn out whole systems, burn out the grid as such. Kevin, are we more or less through the discussion on North Korea? I have
let's move on to this.
A humorous anecdote.
Let's finish the Korea thing.
Yeah, and then I'll...
Was mainstream piece on how talk of war and nuclear weapons is everywhere in North Korea. That's, of course, because the North Koreans want to be independent. And they lost millions of people murdered by the U.S., which destroyed every single one of their major cities during the Korean War of the 1950s. They don't want that to happen again. So they're saying, we're going to build up this deterrent. So if you try to mass murder us again, it's going to come back to bite you. And I think that's perfectly reasonable. Okay, go ahead, Tony. What's your point?
Yeah. Well, this is an interview with Jerry Onos, who was in North Korea, and he says, surprise, surprise, everybody in North Korea is talking about nuclear weapons and the possibility of nuclear war, more so than in the United States. And it hit me last night. Every week this North Korea story comes up, and what are we going to say about it? Do you remember the film with Peter Sellers, The Mouse That Roared? Mm-hmm. The Duchy of Grand Fenwick declared war on the United States. They saw, oh, look at Japan. They got all this wealth from the United States after they lost the war. Look at Germany, West Germany. They got all this wealth from the United States after they lost the war. We should just declare war on the United States. The only thing was they happened to invade with their small little army with bow and arrow and such, and they happened upon a laboratory with a secret weapon more powerful than nuclear weapons, and they took the weapon and the scientists who created it, and they won the war. They beat the United States psychologically, everybody wanted to be with the Grand Duchy.
Oh, wait, so this is the script that that Kim is following over in North Korea. He watched that movie too many times.
Yeah, and and then he likes Dennis Rodman and Peter Sellers. He's hilarious in it. He plays all the different parts. And Kim Jong-un, he's a Hollywood. He really likes to follow Hollywood, no doubt retro movies.
Okay,
he watched The Mouse That Roared.
So when North Korea defeats the United States and occupies the United States, I hope that Kim will appoint Dennis Rodman as the Minister of Hairstyles.
And okay, you know, maybe Dennis Rodman really is like giving real intelligence. Maybe he is actually playing a diplomatic role. And, you know, all of this stuff about him being alcoholic and everything was just a cover to, you know, that Kim Jong-un is actually Trump's wet dream. You know, like this enables him to look brave and powerful and step up all courageously to North Korea. Maybe this is all being staged.
It's really not working very well, though, Tony. I don't sense the United States rallying behind its fearless leader. I think Korea's probably doing better than that in that department. In any case,
U.S. is locked and loaded with fire and fury.
Okay, fire and fury. Let's move on to the fire and fury over in occupied Palestine. All right, first story in the occupied Palestine category is that Bibi and the Israelis want to help build Trump's wall. Last January, Bibi Netanyahu tweeted, "President Trump is right. I built a wall along Israel's southern border. It stopped all illegal immigration. Great success. Great idea." So there you have it, folks. Trump's wall will be a Zionist apartheid wall here in the United States, basically completing the Israelification of America.
Yes, the company Alta North America, which is a subsidiary, and I'm not making this up, of Israel Aerospace Industries, got one of the contracts to build a model and to propose what the wall should look like. And Trump has been very clear that he sees the Israeli apartheid wall as a model for the wall to be built along the border with Mexico. And it seems that this is was very popular. It really elevated his campaign above the other Republicans. And it seemed that this was a very evocative image that a lot of Americans liked. A really secure, quote unquote, wall.
Well, that's because they're terrorized. The sheeple, we don't have humans in America anymore. It's almost all just sheeple. Mm. I noticed that from my experience in the airports. We flew out to San Francisco and back. And these pathetic creatures, they're like zombies just doing whatever the Homeland Security tells them, getting groped without protest. It's utterly sickening. So if these pathetic, terrified creatures who are so afraid of terrorism, because, wow, it's almost 1/20th as dangerous as being hit by lightning. If those terrified, subhuman creatures are so afraid that we must build a wall to save us from the Mexicans, well, screw them. I hope the Mexicans come over here. Anyway, let's move on.
No way. Like, this is hyperbole, and I'm going to step in here and say, you said that Americans aren't humans. And, hey, we need to... reach out to American people and respect American people and not condemn people and dehumanize them en masse. Then you kind of shifted to the people working on the border crossings.
I don't respect the people I saw submitting to Homeland Security gropings and following the rules in those airports. I don't respect any of them, and that was virtually everybody I saw in the airport. I have no respect for them at all. I'm sorry, I can't possibly bring myself to have any respect or compassion even for such worthless subhuman creatures.
Well, I suggest you have compassion for all creatures and all life forms.
Okay, I'll work on it. Maybe I can after the show ends, but right now I'm in a high dander.
Oh, yes, you are. Oh, my God.
Here's more reason to be in a high dander. BB's son is posting classic anti-Semitic material on the Internet. Wow, we better censor the Internet to save it from people like Bibi Netanyahu's son.
Well, this is a big story. And this story is very intertwined with Case 3000. And there is a huge scandal overtaking the Netanyahu regime in Israel concerning Tyson Krupp and the selling of nuclear submarines or submarines to carry nuclear weapons and park them off the shore of Iran. People have been getting kickbacks. And part of this a scandal has to do with Arnon Milchan, who is like a James Bond type character, only working for Israel, not Britain, who is a producer of movies and such. And he has been giving presents to Netanyahu's family, including Yair, who did this post, and his mother, Yair's mother, Benjamin's wife, Sarah. And so the presence to the family of Netanyahu then, so Yair is making this cartoon of people who are opposing his dad, including their former maid and many Naftali and Eldad Yaniv, who went to prison, actually. So this is an internal dispute within Israel. There actually are politics within Israel. There is some kind of democratic system within the charter group within Israel. And this is an important story, and there is something really afoot in terms of exposure of the deep political corruption of the ruling family in Israel that is taking place there.
It's interesting. In Israel, the way you really go after somebody is to say, oh, you posted anti-Semitic material. Well, another crime of Zion is supporting the genocide, not just in Palestine, but also over in Myanmar, where Israel is one of the major arms suppliers to the military in Myanmar that is mass murdering people in villages and expelling people from other villages. It's very much what the Zionists did in 1948 in Palestine and have been doing in slow motion ever since.
Well, what's going on, Kevin? You would know this. You're following this story quite carefully, I think, that within the Rohingya Muslims, there are sort of enforcers who are doing, you know, Muslim-on-Muslim kind of violence, which we unfortunately tend to see, Takfiri or such. Can you enlighten me at all? I see little references to this, but it's one of those things that now when I search Google, I'm noticing big, you know, there's a real bias towards certain interpretations, and you want to find out the other interpretation. It seems to have disappeared, gone. So you know what I'm talking about. Help me understand that.
Honestly, I don't have the faintest idea what you're talking about. I know nothing about any such so alleged Muslim-on-Muslim violence. What's happening here is an ethnic cleansing led by the Buddhist priests who are mass murdering and expelling Rohingya Muslims. And there are other Muslims, too, in Burma, Tony, who are not Rohingya, who are less targeted. But this particular group is essentially being mass murdered and expelled. And there are a few people who are watching their wives and children being raped and murdered who are trying to find a way to defend themselves, but they're not being very effective. And I think we need to find a way to help them be a lot more effective.
Well, Lynn, let me try to explain it as, you know, in fairly rudimentary terms. There would, of course, be some Rohingya Muslims sort of collaborating with the government too much in the eyes of others, and so taking some kind of revenge on those who seem to be, you know, that this is a common position in every sort of colonial situation where people oppress. Some people work with the oppressors, and some people then condemn them, and that must be going on here.
I'm sure it must be, but I have never run across a single story or reference to it. But please do send some for next week's news. Well, another Occupied Palestine story, Pink Floyd founder Roger Waters is praising BDS on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. This was actually a pretty decent Democracy Now! Story, so shout out to Amy and to Roger.
Yes, this is permitted.
Yeah, it didn't quite cross the line at Democracy Now! They're not going to bring us on anytime soon, though. Well, let's move on to this huge category, a very important category this week, the Facebook false flags and internet censorship category. And, Tony, you published this piece that was basically your speech at the 9/11 Truth Film Festival on the attack on academic freedom at the University of Lethbridge, where you're being brutally scapegoated and witch-hunted, probably because you're on the show telling the truth.
Yes, Kevin, perhaps I could ask you to introduce this story, which is my story, and I will pick up, but, you know, you introduced the group to the basic facts, and you're following, you're the journalist closest to this story, the journalist of record of sorts.
Like so many stories, this is such a complicated story that, we have 10 minutes left in the show, for so many stories, but to really summarize it succinctly here, Tony, you were victimized by what looks like a pre-planned operation when somebody planted a horrific image on your Facebook page that said, kill all Jews now. There was never a Holocaust, but there should be. And had a picture of a Jew being strangled by a white man. And this launched a witch hunt against you. The B'nai B'rith Canada publicized this across the media and whipped up this witch hunt, which went after you at your university, the University of Lethbridge, and then Mike Mann, the president of the university, went and suspended you without pay. So you've been fighting back ever since. You did get your payback several months later, but there's a series of court cases, and other kinds of, fora that are continuing the struggle. So in this article, I think you summarize these facts pretty well, and I urge people to, click on the URL in our story listing here at False Flag Weekly News and make sure that you are updated on this critically important story. This may be the most outrageous violation of academic freedom that I've ever heard about.
Yeah, and let me just take it a little further. So there has been a release of documents obtained through Freedom of Information and Privacy, FOIP, as we call it in Canada. I'm sure there's equivalent in the United States. So I've seen the exchanges taking place in the period between August 26, when this horrific Facebook post briefly appeared on my Facebook wall. Apparently, I didn't see it at the time, and then was taken off. And then the next day, there is a letter going into the Premier of Alberta, Rachel Notley, the Minister of Justice, Kathleen Ganley, and the President of the University of Lethbridge, Mike Mann, saying that I am an advocate for the murder of Jews. That was the direct statement from a friend of the Bene Brith Canada, the Anti-Defamation League of Bene Brith, the Canadian branch. So I want an explanation from Dr. Mann, the President. Like, he got a letter on September the 1st from something called the Canadian Jewish Civil Rights Association, signed by its president, Bert Raphael. And Bert Raphael quotes this horrific post on September the 1st and then goes on to say, this is outrageous that these words would come from the lips of a professor at a Canadian university. He should be fired. This is on September the 1st. Why did Dr. Mann not contact me immediately, say, I had said those things, and I was really in that frame of mind. He would need to know that. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be due diligence for him to find that out. Instead, he doesn't talk to me. I become aware of it on my own in mid-September. I go and talk to the administration on September 26th. I don't know that they've been having meetings with a variety of Israeli lobby Jewish organizations, a very powerful political lobby, external political lobby, sending in their lawyers, having private meetings on me. Then I find out on October the 3rd, suddenly I'm suspended without pay initially. I would also like Michael Mostyn, the CEO of Bene Brith Canada, to give us some explanation about his relationship and Bene Brith Canada's relationship with Joshua Goldberg, who apparently created this atrocious post. He must know about it. He's used this atrocious post in other cases like Avalian. He refers to it in a variety of situations. He says, oh, it's anti-Semitism is really on the rise. Kill all Jews are out there on Facebook. Well, what about being, you know, having some kind of knowledge? I mean, is it just incompetence, or does he know all about this? What is the source of that Planet Facebook post? Those are new ideas that I'm putting out here right now.
When Ben Garrison's investigation showed that Joshua Goldberg was the source of that insane kill all Jews now image that they planted on your Facebook page, unbeknownst to you, to lead this witch, to set off this witch hunt. And it's just beyond belief that your university administration and Mann actually went along with this. Okay, well, we're going to have to cover these other internet censorship stories too, or internet false flag, Facebook false flag, etc. type stories. Here we have the German censorship laws are being used to justify censoring the internet. Again, part of this push to stop free speech on the internet in order to shut down shows like False Flag Weekly News.
Yes, I submitted this story yesterday. I was looking all over Google for leads to stories about the scrubbing of sites from the internet. And I'm hearing about this anecdotally, for instance, from Mario Garneau, who was rhymed off a list of sites that have just been made to disappear following the disappearance of Daily Stormer. And it's kind of weird that Google has nothing on this story of Google removing sites, or you know, there's different agencies, registrar, the domain name registrars, like how do you get a site taken off the internet. This seems to be going on large scale right now. And so let us know what sites are being taken down, and let's get some citizens journalism going on.
Here's one to me. I'll let you know right now. Southfront. They're totally different. Southfront is a very good political site. No reason whatsoever to mess with it. And yet Southfront's YouTube channel keeps getting jammed and taken down by YouTube for purely political reasons, because their analysis of Syria is very close to ours. And then we have Hillary Clinton's new book in the next slide being promoted as Amazon deletes all of these numerous one-star reviews. I mean, nobody could stand Hillary hardly, and nobody likes her book, but you wouldn't know that because Amazon is tweaking the data.
Yeah, so this story of scrubbing the internet, this is a new term to me. I'm just learning this term, scrubbing the internet. I mean, we read about it in abstract ways, but now it's happening, and I think news of it is being covered up, and so let's move on, but this is a huge story.
Yeah, Amazon should be a public utility. It's a de facto monopoly. The same with Google, the same with Facebook. All of these should be public utilities, transparently run. Everything that gets posted should be left up unless it's illegal. And yet here are these billionaire CEOs, these oligarchs who completely control our information today, think that they can mess with it to try to brainwash us into seeing things the way they do. It's an outrage. They should all be imprisoned, and all of these big companies should be taken over by the government and made public utilities and run transparently with complete enforcement of absolute freedom of speech, except in cases of breaking laws.
I remind you that nobody owns the internet, and the way the internet was set up, it was set up with the view that there might be nuclear war, and so messages can be diverted and such, and we need to start reconstructing the internet and take it away from these monopolies who think they own it now. They don't own it.
Okay, well, last category here, we only have 3 minutes for the entire rest of our show. Comic book history, Anne Frank's diary is now out in comic book form. It's going to make a lot of money because it's still copyrighted, because the copyright owners admit that Anne Frank didn't write it. Her father wrote it. If she had written it, it would be copyright free now and anybody could publish it. But no, so they've admitted that it's a fraud, and they're making, in order to continue making vast amounts of money off it. And you probably shouldn't comment on that one, Tony. Let's move on to this one. That's the 9/11 Commission Report comic book. This is a real comic book, but you know, I mean, it's kind of a redundant expression, 9/11 Commission Report comic book. If you want a real comic book about 9/11 that you can learn something from, go to the next one, 9/11, The Big Lie, which is a terrific example of how you can use comic books to get across truthful information. And finally, in this category, we can go back, you can talk about these, but we have this New York Times story today called When History's Losers Write the Story. Basically, what this is telling us is that it's terrible that the Confederates got to tell their story after the Civil War, that it's terrible that the Germans might ever be able to tell their story after World War II, that the Muslims might be able to tell their story about the genocide that's murdered 34 million of us due to the 9/11 false flag genocide trigger operation. Never let the losers tell the story. We must have a dominant myth imposed by the victors. That is what the New York Times is telling us.
Well, I've devoted my academic career to trying to bring forward the story of losers in history, the big one being the Native Americans in the Western Hemisphere, who, you know, have been most made to suffer colonization and imperial globalization. So-called losers, I mean, they get together and need to form confederacies. We need to strengthen ourselves and create a kind of anti-imperial approach to globalization. We need to transcend boundaries and join together. And so the people who don't prevail with their expansionary empire building in world history, we want to get together with such people and create a coalition that counters the imperial globalization aimed at our enslavement, especially debt enslavement.
That's right. And we also need to be able to investigate and find out about things like possible weather modification programs, militarization of the weather. Here we have a top scientist telling us that HAARP, is responsible for recent hurricanes. Well, HARP has been taken down, the original high altitude, whatever it was, project up in Alaska that beamed microwaves at the Earth's ionosphere and magnetic field and could be used as a very powerful weapon of war, controlling weather and many other things. So, Tony, do you think these hurricanes might conceivably be less than fully natural and unsteered?
Well, certainly Mikio Kaku, who's well known to many folks and speaks on alternative media and sometimes gets on mainstream media, and here he is on CBS, and he kind of insists on saying we've already been doing weather modification since the 1960s. He actually said it was used in Vietnam. And then his hosts correct him and say, allegedly, you know, and then, oh, it's okay, allegedly. He's talking about HARP. He's talking about lasers, trillion-watt lasers that create little particles of energy that rain coalesces around these. So the idea that weather modification, like we can talk about chemtrails, but the larger concept is geoengineering. You know, this has been going on. This isn't just some prospect for the future. There is Kaku, kind of Dr. Kaku spills the beans on this in this interview.
Okay, well, Alex Jones is spilling the beans on Donald Trump being covertly drugged. Tony, is that possible?
Yeah. Well, this is a huge story in that, Alex Jones is very close to Donald Trump. He suggests that he's speaking to Trump. And there he is announcing that Alex Jones is being drugged in his Diet Coke and in his tea. And he says by nighttime, this has been going on for 2 months, Donald Trump starts to slur. And he says this has been a common practice with the treatment of presidents, that you want a compliant president that's not too much on the ball. So in a way, is this Alex Jones trying to create some kind of deniability for Trump? You know, Trump is doing embarrassing things that they can somehow deny it, or is he sending a message to Donald Trump? Because Donald Trump's going to find this. It's a very, very important story, and it has all kinds of implications. And Jones, to his credit, gives a rather credible history of how this was done in the past with Reagan, for instance.
Indeed. And once again, it raises the question of who's really giving out fake news. Is it Alex Jones or is it the mainstream or both? I don't know. But overall, I would tend to prefer Alex Jones. There's more of the real truth about how things work in Alex Jones than there is in the New York Times. I'm not a huge fan of either one. In any case, I'm not a huge fan of Hillary Clinton either. And here she is promoting her book that nobody wants, Amazon scrubbing the one-star reviews, and she's whining that nobody says a word when it was my fake severed head. People are protesting Trump having his head cut off in effigy, but they never protested when people cut my head off in effigy. Well, maybe, you know, I think those knitting needles, clicking and clacking in A Tale of Two Cities before the French Revolution when heads started getting cut off, I think there's a tremendous unconscious or half-conscious desire in the American people to have these horrific leaders, Trump and Hillary being, you know, America's ultimate bad parents, basically get decapitated. I mean, it's a French Revolution situation brewing, Tony. What do you think?
Well, Hillary Clinton is a very important figure in U.S. Affairs, in the political landscape of the United States. I think Trump really fell down when, you know, he didn't arrest Hillary Clinton. When he's running against her, lock her up. He gets in power. Oh, well, she's kind of my friend, and we wouldn't do that. We all stick together at the highest level. I think rather than thinking of her as a hot has-been, I think it's time to think of her as a serious witness to much U.S. history, a maker of much U.S. history, to read her book, to listen to her, to encourage her to tell her stories about what she saw in the background. What, were they really cocaine freaks when, you know, Bill was governor of Arkansas and all of that? Hillary knows where the skeletons are buried, and maybe if we treat her nicely and respectfully, she'll come forward with some of this information that we need to know.
Okay, well, Hillary, you can consider that an invitation to join us as a special guest commentator next week on False Flag Weekly News. and reveal where all the bodies are buried. I just can't wait. And whether or not she takes us up on it, we'll be back, God willing, next week for another episode of False Flag Weekly News. Thank you, Tony, and thank you, Alan, in the control booth, and thank you, viewers. See you next time.
So long.